Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, we have another great interview today.
We sure do.
I think that one of the things that I've enjoyed the most since we started working with PsychReg, and I'm not even sure why it didn't happen until we kind of got connected with PsychReg, but being able to do some of these interviews and meet up with people from around the country, around the world, and talk with them about their work, and is really exciting.
Right, right. We've met people from literally from all over the world. Learned a great deal. We learn something every time. We're going to really learn some things today.
Yes.
That will be of personal and professional value.
That's right.
From what I understand.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward. We say I'm really looking forward to this one. I am really looking forward to this one.
And I'm going to say this up front because I think that it's because of knowing how some of our listeners check out the podcast and everything. Know that we're going to be talking about relationships today, and we're going to maybe even get into some details about some different things as it relates to relationships and intimacy and things like that. So it may be good if you're listening in the car and your little one is around.
Someone's talking.
He just gets up and walks out. If your little ones are listening and in the car with you, this may be one to step back and maybe listen to when you're alone or with your partner or something like that, because it may be, we may cover topics that are not necessarily best for little ones. But anyways, what we have today is we're going to talk with Dr. Ruxandra LeMay. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. And I'm sure Richard will walk back in just a couple of minutes. But until then, let me tell the listeners a little bit about you so that we know a little bit more about what we're talking about today. So Dr. LeMay is a licensed psychologist with experience and interest in executive consulting, couples therapy, divorce mediation, parenting, addiction, anxiety, and stress management. All of the great things that we love that psychologists do. She's the author of the book entitled My Spouse Wants More Sex Than Me, The 2-Minute Solution for a Happier Marriage. And that's actually the topic of our podcast today is to talk about some of the details and recommendations and information from her book. So welcome again, Dr. LeMay, to our show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
And look who came back.
I'm excited to be back.
Well, good. Now she's ready. Okay.
Speaking of interruptions from our children, that was one from one of my children.
Was it?
Who came to get the car.
Oh. So you're stuck here now.
I'm stuck here now. I'm a captive audience.
That's right. So, well, Dr. Lee, tell us a little bit about what you do, your work, and about how you got into the work of with relationships and marriages and those kinds of wonderful details.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for the introduction. And like you mentioned, part of my experience is with executive consulting, and that's actually my first part of my career. I have a background in business management, and I've been on the corporate side quite a bit. And then personally, when I was younger, my parents had a divorce, went through a divorce, and that kind of affected me. And so I've always had an interest in relationships. You become a little skeptical about relationships when that happens, as I was not really finding my calling on the corporate side, I decided I was going to go back to psychology and get my doctorate. So I did that. And it's interesting, though, because although I've still practiced on the corporate side, and I'm with one foot on the corporate side and on one foot in the clinical side, really when it comes to psychology, I'm using it every day. I mean, it's just one of those things where, because the workplace is all about relationships, it's about interaction, it's about getting along, about team efforts. It's really not any different than you take a couple or a family and you just expand it, and you take into a small company or a bigger company, and you end up with the same healthy or unhealthy patterns that you see in both settings. But going back to, like I said, my childhood and just my experience that way, I knew that unless I kind of really went for psychology, learned a little bit, did some self-discovery work, that my relationship was not going to be better than my parents. And so I really had an interest in that. And then obviously throughout my school, I ended up doing a lot of practice with couples. And that's pretty much how I ended up with an interest in that at every level of the relationship. So, you know, even if it's premarital type of, training or education, and then couples or divorce mediation or co-parenting, it's like at every stage of the relationship, I've kind of done it all. So I've seen them at their best and at their worst.
It's so interesting the way that you describe it, because I think back to when I took that beloved ECPP test to become licensed. And one of the questions I had was to relate a industrial organizational model of, you know, management and relationships. And I had to relate that to a family systems, theory. And, you know, I didn't really, you know, of course, no program, graduate program connects these things, you know, across the spectrum. And so it was obviously it was a connection that I had never even considered making before. And it sounds like that's something that you've done in your practice or your career, as, you know, you've kind of walked in these different domains and saw the similarities across the spectrum.
Oh yeah. I mean, we absolutely and this is even us, if you think about it, if you really pay attention to what you're doing, how you're communicating, how you're talking at home, maybe at work you're slightly on better behavior because, you know, that paycheck is a great behavioral incentive to behave, you know. But other than that, our thoughts are pretty very similar. Like what you're thinking at home when you're getting frustrated and what you're thinking at work when you're frustrated, they're very similar. Mm-hmm. When you want to walk out on your spouse because you're sick of it, or when you want to walk out on your boss because you're sick of that, they're very similar patterns. So. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting stuff.
Absolutely.
So,
let's talk about.
We have to get to this 2-minute warning. Dennis, I feel like I'm in a professional football thing here. We have the 2-minute warning, the most important 2 minutes in football. So this is the most important 2 minutes in a relationship. Is that my understanding?
What are we talking about? Are we already there?
Yeah. You know, that's how he works sometimes. It's just, you know, let's just get right to it. So, well, but let's talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to the point where you wrote your book, your book about, you know, because we know that intimacy is so important in relationships.
And that was really my question, that you talk about relationships in the workplace or at home. There are many facets to a relationship. There's communication and there's consideration and there's all that. So how did you finally end up distilling all that to this 2-minute? How did it get to sex? I mean, there are so many other things in a relationship. Is it because sex is more important? Is it because that's where this gets played out and causes the most trouble? Is it more important clinically?
Well, so first of all, sex is really what differentiates a couple relationship versus any other relationship, right?
True, right.
Because generally, if you didn't have sex with that person that you're living with, that's just your roommate, pretty much.
Right.
So, and then at work, hopefully you don't have sex at work, although that's a completely different issue altogether that happens. But but really, in a healthy way, what differentiates a couple intimacy or couple relationship versus all the other relationships we have is sex.
It's sex, right? Right.
We choose our spouse primarily first of all, on that physical attraction. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that's not the only thing.
Right.
You have, but it's that primary, you know, motivation is sex. And but then it all changes. And this is the one thing that usually when I have therapy with couples, I always go over this again, because we don't talk about it. when we take those vows or when we are dating, and you know, everything we think it's going to be exciting, everything is going to always be great. You know, it's a good, you know, for bad times and good times and bad times, we're always going to be there for each other. We don't really mean that, honestly. I don't think we really understand what it means to be there for each other during bad times until it actually happens. And then, you know, we all know that 50% of people bail out when those tough times come around. But really that, you know, we talked about intimacy and what that means. And so I'm going to start there and I will work my way to 2 minutes, I promise. But when it's really a connection. So you have to have that connection in a marriage. And that connection really means you want to feel understood. You want to feel wanted. You want to feel trusted. And you want to be comforted. And then you want to do the same thing for the other person. When any of those things kind of change, and they will change for everybody at one point or another, or they go through stages, generally speaking, the sex part drops first.
Right.
And now there is such a thing as a gender difference. Whether we agree, we like to talk about it or we don't. And I don't like to generalize because there are always exceptions, obviously. But generally speaking, if you look at research and we look at the middle of the continuum, generally speaking, men want more sex, women don't need it as much. That's just how it's going to be. And that's what the research shows. But as we navigate the relationship and that changes and the sex drops, that creates a lot of problems. So I found that that lack of connection from a sex perspective affects relationships quite a bit. And that's why I end up focusing on the sex piece in my book, trying to bridge that gap when that disconnect happens, trying to bridge that gap.
Roxandra, quick question. Mm-hmm. The data on men want more sex than women. Is that true for childless couples as well as couples who have children?
Honestly, I can't think of the specific study right now, and I will look at it. But yes, it is true. And not only that, but the studies that I've looked actually, and I quoted in the book, even include same-sex.
Would it include same-sex?
Where generally you have less discrepancies with same-sex partners than you have in a heterosexual relationship. Because, and again, you can't generalize. You're always going to have exceptions of all sorts of flavors and nuances. Mm-hmm. But where I do see your point is that kids really do add another stress level. And people they just don't have time. They have more stress. It adds a few other dynamics where if it's just you and, you know, just those two partners, you have more time, more really availability. It comes down to availability, emotional and physical availability to give to each other. If you have any problems, to troubleshoot through all those problems because it's just you two. When you have kids, you're emotionally and physically sharing that space with one, two, three, four, however many kids you have. So literally draining on that person. It doesn't mean that I'm not attracted necessarily to you. It doesn't mean that I'm not loving you anymore. It doesn't mean it just means I'm exhausted.
Right.
And I think women generally get emotionally more exhausted by that. We take on a lot more. I think men are more able to compartmentalize a little better.
Yeah, we do.
Kind of distract themselves a little better.
Right.
And where all this other fluff doesn't really count. But we women, generally, we pay attention to so many details that all those details are just wearing us out.
Right. Yeah, it makes me wonder how much of it is related to sort of those traditional stereotypical roles, whereas, you know, the mom tends to be more involved and engaged with the children than the dad, and that is changing. There's a huge transition happening right now with that. But you know, traditionally that's what happened. And so, you know, as we enter into the world of, you know, two working parents, now we have, you know, that huge issue when people come in, you know, when we happen to see couples or even individuals, you know, the wife tends to be the one, or the mother tends to be the one who is not just working all day long, but she's also the one that comes home and is responsible for cooking and dealing with that, because of those typical stereotypical roles that we, for some reason, tend to hold on to, even though they're somewhat arguably archaic in many ways.
Yeah,
and I, you know, in a little bit of self-disclosure, I'm actually in one of those non-traditional, you know, type where I go and work, and then my husband works from home and stays with our kids. And I'll tell you, I thought that was the case, that, you know, maybe a lot, it has something to do with, you know, who works in outside of the home and who doesn't. It's not. I am just as detailed as if it was the other way around. And I want to. Essentially, I have a lot of stuff on my brain at work, and then I come home and I try to be very detailed with each one of those kids. And my husband will tell me, "Well, why don't you like go relax? I'll take care of it." And like, I can't. I just, you know. So I think women we just like to take on a lot.
So my question is this: if in a traditional marriage, the woman takes responsibility for the children, because of that, her sex drive goes down. If a man is primarily responsible for the children, does his sex drive go down?
So the best way I can no, not really.
Right.
I don't think so.
That's what I would predict. But so there's something else at work here. There's some emotional investment or some involvement that women have with their children that men don't have, regardless of the role reversal.
Or hormonal.
Well, that we get.
Yeah, so I mean, that's exactly it. If the hormones make a big difference. And actually, the best way I could also describe this, there was a cartoon that I saw a long time ago. Actually, I used to use it in therapy. It was two TV remote controls, and was a male one and a female one. And the male one had three buttons. And I'm not trying, you know, I please don't take this out of context. I'm not trying to simplify the male brain.
I understand.
But the male brain had three buttons, and I think it was something like beer, sports, and sex, or something like that. And then you have the female remote control, and it had like literally 1,000 buttons, and it had like different shapes and different colors, and it was just so hard to navigate, you'd like never know how to use it. And so I thought that was like such a great, again, you have to have some sense of humor and not feel offended by it. But it was such a great way of really distinguishing the between the two of them. We are just different. We truly are. And I think in terms of sex, I don't know that the sexual, like the female sexual revolution did us a lot of favors. Because, you know, it pretty much, I totally get it. And I consider myself a feminist. I totally get it. I understand it. But pretty much said, hey, if a man wants to have sex 10 times a day, I can do as well as he can. You know, I'm going to go for it. I can do whatever a man can do. Yes, physically we can. Do we want to? Not really. It's kind of setting us up for failure later on. When you are, because again, hormonally, we are not set up for that.
Right.
We, you know, we don't have testosterone. We don't have as much of it. And we have a bunch of other hormones that are going up and down all the time, depending on what's going on. Aside from the monthly cycle, you also have the kids that add a whole new different, you know, set of hormones that mess up our internal system. So while men generally are more consistent in their sex drive, female sex drive just goes up and down, and not only could go up and down within a matter of 24 hours, or it goes up and down in a matter of, you know, a couple of years, depending on what's going on. So you have a lot of inconsistency there. And I think that's really what a lot of times creates problems, because men feel like, well, hang on one second. You told me you're attracted to me. You told me you want to have sex with me all the time. You wanted to like, look at all these hot women that are like on all the magazines, that like, they look like they want to have sex. So like it's a lot of like messages in our society that women should be wanting to have sex all the time. And when we don't, it's like, well, what's wrong with you?
Yes.
Let's put you on a female Viagra pill. Maybe that will help you out.
Right.
And at the same time, I think it did a disservice for the men, because usually what happens when you have a discrepancy, and I'm boiling down to, you know, like the last part of a conversation, if a man wants to have sex all the time, the wife will be like, what are you, an addict? What's wrong with you? Why do you need to have sex all the time? So they make them feel like crap, really, because they want to have sex all the time. No, there's nothing wrong with them. That's just how they are wired. And then the other way around, like the female would rather, you know, play with the iPhone or the iPad or read a book on Kindle or, you know, I don't know, watch a marathon of Scandal, you know.
They would rather do anything else.
They were anything else, yes.
Right. But anything.
Sex, is there something wrong with them? No, they just don't have the same priorities. Mm-hmm. So the idea, and circling back a very big circle to the 2-minute solution, was how do we bridge the two without necessarily, you know, sacrificing the relationship, really.
In your clinical work with couples, is this hard for them to grasp this concept? I mean, we understand. Is this hard for couples to understand? Is it hard for them? Or is it that once you explain this to them, sort of the lights go on and they say, oh, okay, we can manage this, because of the understanding that they get?
It takes a while.
Does it?
It's not easy, and like I mentioned briefly to you earlier, I really thought that the man would be more inclined to, you know, to kind of take this on and be excited about it, because I'm getting something. Something is better than nothing, right?
Right.
And they are not, because what they really want, and I've honestly, my husband was the one that's probably the most honest about this. That they really want. Sex is not just sex. It's not just the physical. It does have, obviously, the physical benefits.
Right.
But it's really, in a way, men connect through sex also. And it's right. Their way of connecting. While for a woman, if I just talk to you and you cuddle me and you hold me while I'm watching my movie, that's how I'm connecting. But for men, sex is not just the physical release. Sometimes it is, and that's important. But it's not always that. They need and feel like they want to be wanted and pursued and, you know, in a sexual manner. And when that doesn't happen, it feels like, oh, 2 minutes. It's like pity sex. And I actually had to put that down in the book. I said, 2 minutes is not just pity sex. It's really just sex that needs to happen really fast. So
I don't mind pity sex.
You are wiser in your approach. Or you're just worn out and you've had so many
wiser. Oh man,
your wife just trained you very well.
Therein lies a tale, Rosendra.
No, and I think that the other thing that I put that in my book, that 2 minute cannot be an all end solution. It cannot be the only thing. It cannot. Because you need to have that connection, because it's very easy by the way to rely on the 2 minute solution and then forget about everything else, because it's easy and it's fast. And it's like, okay, obviously I'm assuming by this point everybody knows what 2 minute means. It's kind of self-explanatory. But if you just rely on just let's get it over with, you kind of mentally cross that off your list, like, okay, I've done this, I've connected with my husband, I'm good, it can bridge a few things, and it can, you know, definitely patch things through stressful times, like when you have small kids and you don't have time and so on. But in the long run, it's not the only thing that you can rely that you need to rely on. You do need to have those times alone. You do need to have maybe put some effort into it and just kind of let go of all the other thoughts you have on your mind and just kind of focus on each other and become emotionally and physically available for each other.
Yes, what I hear is 2 minutes every day, but every once in a while, you know, a 30 or 45 minute. Is that not what I... No?
I don't know about every day. I think the every day part, that was your addition.
Oh, I got confused. My fault.
Spoken like a man, right?
Yeah, no, I think I recommend like 2 or 3 times a week if possible. If not, you know, even once a week it's okay, because honestly, some people don't. Like, you can have like months without and nothing happens. No, but I think it's also important to make the distinction between if you're in a healthy place in your relationship or not, because it makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, if you have bigger problems in your relationship,
right?
Yeah. If you don't have the trust, if you don't have, you know, the feeling that the other person is in on your team, if you don't feel like you're really caring about each other, the sex is definitely going to be out of the question. I mean, right. Not even the 2 minutes. I will never persuade a woman to give 2 minutes if she feels like her husband does not understand her and is not in her corner. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So this is a bridge for people that are in a healthy place in their relationship, care about each other, understand each other, are willing to compromise and are willing to still pay attention to each other's needs. But because of where they are in their place, either a very, you know, kids, small kids, or, you know, stressful jobs, or, you know, an ailing parent that they are trying, you know, they are being caregivers, and they, you know, just all sorts of stressful situations, that the sex is, you know, falls to the bottom of the list, that would be a great place for them. If not, if you have trust issues and all the other things, that therapy is what you need, right, because you need to fix the bigger issues first,
right,
in order to be able to, you know, have 2 minutes with humor and kind of fun and laugh about it. And it's very much a chicken or the egg type of deal. Like, I still haven't been able to figure out what causes some of these problems. Is it the lack of communication, or that feeling that we are not understanding and we're not on the same page, that's causing for generally the female, but it could be both, to stop having sex, which means that causes more frustration on the male side. And then, because now I'm not getting sex. So if I'm not getting sex, then I don't want to help you around the house. I don't want to be around you and the kids. I want to go somewhere else and escape. Or, you know, so like, which one is it? It's kind of like a circular, but where does it start?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to pinpoint.
Right.
And obviously, as you guys know, in a couple, on a day-to-day basis, there are so many, it's so fast paced, and things, it could be like the tone of voice, the what you're saying, you know, if you're not paying attention, it, you know, combined with, you know, what else is going on. There's so many factors that could affect that mood. And right. This, again, specifically more so for a female than for a male, because I don't think, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but most of them that I've talked to, especially, and again, my husband as well as others that I've talked to, I could be into a big fight. And if I say, okay, let's stop this and have sex, you'll be like, oh, okay, let's put this on hold. Let's go have sex. And then we'll come back to the conversation and we can fight a little later. Most women don't function like that. If I'm having a fight, I'm having a fight. Yeah, there will be no sex, you know, in the middle of the fight.
Roxandra, you said at one point in one of your writings that the two things that we have to manage in a marriage are sex and communication.
Well, there are many things to manage, but I put the communication there because, well, first of all, sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
Well, so it's, I don't know, and by the way, I'm sure you hear a slight accent. You know, I'm originally from Romania, so in Europe, you know, that there's a different kind of, I guess, openness to talking about sex. And yeah. I think in general in United States, we are a little bit more conservative when it comes to that. So I am not sure that generally that there is a conversation about sex, like even sex education. I just went through this at school with my fifth grader. You know, they shut down the program because
sure.
It was not something that they felt like it was necessary, you know, and so it becomes this taboo subject, and it depends on what family you grow up in and what you get from that. But I don't think I've learned that couples don't talk about sex. Like, they don't talk about their needs. I mean, other than, okay, I want to have sex. Do you want to have sex? Okay. Other than that, they don't really are not able to explain what's behind that and what they want and what they don't want. So anytime you have discrepancies in a relationship, it doesn't matter if it's just the sexual desire or even how you've, you know, money issues or work or in-laws issues or whatever. Every time you have a discrepancy, if you don't know how to communicate, you're going to end up in a gridlock of some sort.
And that's exactly true. And you know, I think that even thinking about what you mentioned there, that, you know, we talk about, do you want to have sex or do you not want to have sex, you know, that type of very basic communication. But many times that doesn't even happen. You know, you have certainly, and I know that I've certainly heard this from couples before, you know, he will, the husband will walk by and touch or grab or do something like that. And that is supposed to intend to be some type of communication, like, yeah, you know, hey, I would be interested in having sex. Yeah. And, you know, she responds or doesn't respond. And there's no words. It's just, well, you know, a physical act that happens that is supposed to communicate some of these really important things that we hope to communicate in our relationship.
Right. And you end up just like the example you just gave. And that's perfect, because you end up with like shortcuts almost, yeah, to that, where, you know, he will stop by and, you know, maybe do like a little pat on the butt or something like that. And she'll like go into, oh, not tonight, I have a headache. Right.
Right.
It's like, how? And of course she came up with that because she probably doesn't have a headache, or I have, you know, I have to do laundry or whatever, you know, but it's like just pretty much it's a way of saying, leave me alone.
Right.
But you're right. It's not like any of that. They don't go into the conversation like, hey, you've rejected me like three. Every time you say no to me, I really feel rejected. And when I feel rejected, I feel sad. I feel not wanted. I feel like you don't care. You don't love me. Now, I think if she hears that more often, she would probably feel, not necessarily feel bad. She probably would realize, be more aware,
right,
of how her response affects him.
Right.
At the same time, when she's overwhelmed and she's in the kitchen and she's trying to make it all work, and again, I'm stereotyping right now, but I'm just giving an example. She's in the kitchen making kids, you know, dinner and trying to finish homework, and all he kind of thinks about is like, you know, for, you know, a lack of better expression, humping her leg. You know, it's like, dude, like, do you not, if you maybe help me out with what's going on, like, do you see that I'm in the middle of this chaos? And if you help me out, maybe it will create some goodwill here. And
I tried that, didn't work. No, I'm only kidding.
I have to come up with some new things.
No, I'm only kidding. You're absolutely right. No, I agree. But back to that other point, we do not talk about sex in this country,
yeah,
particularly in the South. I don't know what it's like in the West, but in the South, it's a topic that you simply don't talk. You do not discuss it. And therefore, we're not very good at discussing it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are families where you are not allowed to talk about sex. You're not allowed to say the word.
Yeah. A story I often tell when working with people about the importance of communicating, and especially, you know, truthfully communicating with our kids about it, is that, you know, I had to do an evaluation one time, and it was a 16-year-old girl, and she was, you know, 8 months pregnant. And I said, so I was, of course, I asked her about it, and she says, I don't even know how it happened. And I sat back and, of course, made a joke and said, well, you know, there are certain things that you have to do. And she says, no, that's not what I mean. You know, the guy that I was with, he like drinks Mountain Dew all day and he smokes pot. And everybody knows that if you smoke pot and drink Mountain Dew, that it makes you sterile. You can't have kids if you drink Mountain Dew and smoke. And I was completely taken aback because she's an otherwise bright girl.
Right.
But she truthfully, honestly believed that, you know, that was at the time, at least, that was a rumor that had been going around that if you do those two things, you can't get a girl pregnant.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly it. And I've had many examples like that with teenagers, because I worked with teenagers quite a bit too. And I would tell the parents, because I was working in an addiction center at the time. So the focus was on the drugs, but I would tell the parents, I'm like, can you please talk to your kids about sex? And, you know, because they have lots of wrong information. And they're like, oh no, my kid is not having sex. I'm like, okay. They don't need that conversation. I'm like, first of all, your kid is having sex on top of the fact that he's selling pot out of the back of your truck. But aside from that, trust me, they are. And they're thinking about it. And how can you not? Because this is where it's crazy. If you think about it in this country, how the images and the marketing is sexualized. So it's everything. You go to a grocery store and you have everybody's naked on the way out, you know, when you're like checking out into on the magazines. And so everything we're getting bombarded with, you know, Beyonce, you know, shaking her booty and everything is about sex, but then we don't talk about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So your brain is getting stimulated, whether you are aware of it or not.
Right.
But then we don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to control those reactions that we're having. So that's part of the issue. And you're right. It starts with the kids. It starts with teaching your kids at appropriate, obviously appropriate ages and so on. But it's not something we do.
Yeah, we were lucky, I think, growing up in my home, because my mom was a nurse for a OBGYN.
Yeah.
And so we were very open at talking about it. Like at dinner.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so a lot of stuff that I found that it's helpful in therapy is really education. Mm-hmm. And I think if you educate people on it and education, not just, you know, the physical part, but how the emotional component and how the cognitive, the thoughts and how everything is all kind of comes together and one is triggered by the next and so on. And just giving them a little bit of self-awareness, then hopefully they are going to be able to take it and replicate it at home and be able to go from there. But it's tough. I mean, it takes a while, because essentially you are reparenting.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, so how do we encourage our listeners and our patients, you know, to think about some of the concepts and principles you present in your book. And as you said, it's sort of that, it sounds like you're saying that that's sort of the start, but there's still more work to do. There's still more things to think about.
Yeah. So it's obviously it's a behavioral technique, really. That's what it is. Because a lot of times you end up in a gridlock and you need something to shock the relationship to get them going. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned sometimes is that even we start with, hey, just do something. If you're waiting to feel like doing it or think about doing it, it may never happen. So just do it sometimes. But do it with a different expectation. And again, I refer in the book, even though I generalize that men have a higher sex drive, women have a low sex drive. But usually I think of that just generally in a relationship, you're going to have one that's higher and one is lower. Because if they're at the same level, you're not going to have a problem, by the way.
Right.
You know, obviously. So this is just when you have a low and a high. But generally what I'm saying is if you go with the expectation, let's just do it, but you do it for, okay, not necessarily 2 minutes, could be 5 minutes, but just with the idea that it's not going to be a dragged on process where you have to like wear your black lace, you know, lingerie and like, you know, foreplay half an hour, then intercourse half an hour and then cuddling for half an hour. Oh my gosh, it's like an hour and a half. I could be doing so much other stuff, right? So if you don't go in that mindset, you just know you're going to have quick sex essentially, and then you can move on. Sometimes it's just that. But mm-hmm. what I've also learned is that sometimes in the middle of it, because you don't have all those extra expectations, that actually they get to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And then they end up having more than 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But at the same time with that, there's an important distinction. You always have to let the low sex partner decide that in the middle of it.
Right.
Because if it's, this is not like, you know, Thanksgiving, Black Friday type of thing. Now that I'm in, I'm going to bait and switch you, right? So, and I'm going to be here for like half an hour. No, because that's going to annoy the partner and she's never going to offer the 2 minutes ever again.
Right.
So it's really straight to the point. Hey, if you're feeling good, everything is great. Do you want to continue? Do you want to keep going? If she says no, then no, it's a no. If she says yes, then you keep going and see how it goes. But it's just, I think with women, like I said, it's the anticipatory anxiety a lot of times. Mm-hmm. That just makes us say, no, I don't have time. Right. I don't want to do it because I don't have time. And if you just narrow that time frame, things may happen and you never know.
Yeah.
But communication is key.
Yeah, you're right. I was just going to say that it sounds like, you know, something that goes along with it that's it's critical is, of course, that communication.
And a sense of humor. You got to have a sense of humor.
You're writing a second book. Is it about the same topic or is it a different topic?
No, so I'm actually going a little bit the other way. And I'm actually, it's actually, my spouse is different than me. Can we mediate irreconcilable differences?
Uh-huh.
And so I am going more the first one was more of a behavioral solution. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going for things where, what if things are not as healthy in a relationship? Mm-hmm. What if you get to a point where you just really don't see eye to eye, like no matter how much you're trying to communicate, it's like you're on different planets. Like you're not even talking about the same thing. And I'm actually going the attachment theory perspective, and in terms of how we attach to people, that could be completely how we attach to our caregivers versus how we attach as adults. And it's very interesting stuff. And I'm actually, and again, a little bit of self-disclosure. I mentioned that we have three kids and the third one kind of kicked our butt a little bit in terms of the pressure on the relationship. And my spouse and I are actually very different in terms of personalities and the pressure and everything else just kind of got to us a little bit. And of course, as a psychologist, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, you take this even more personally because how can you not, you know, how can you look for an escape when, you know, this is what I do for a living. So every failure in your relationship almost becomes your personal failure. You know, it's much more intense as a psychologist. Same thing with parenting or anything else, probably. So I was kind of dedicated to everything is kind of my books come from a very personal experience because I feel like if I relate to my audience, like it's not just something I read in a book and I, you know, I make them do it. It's something that I've tried and I've really given a lot of thought to. So it's trying to understand, okay, what happens if you're so different? Or maybe you've grown over time. Maybe you're very close and you know, maybe you were very compatible or felt compatible when you started dating. Mm-hmm. But 20 years later, 30 years later, people change.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have different interests. You know, nowadays marriages can go up to 50 years because we live longer, right? So that's a long time to be with the same person. So what if you get to a point where you're different? Can you still find a way to maintain that marriage, even if you've kind of pretty much placed yourself as I'm different than him, he doesn't understand me, I don't understand him. How can we get along still and make this a successful marriage?
Okay.
That's great. That's a great perspective.
I look forward to that one too.
Yeah, and I'm making it 100 pages again because you know my motto, right?
Oh,
you know, it cannot take longer than a couple of minutes, so we don't have time to read.
We agree. We do translational research here. You know, translating the complicated theorizing and experiments that others do and make them available to the lay audience, you know, parents and teachers. So we agree.
Yeah. That's what got us started with doing podcasts and some of the writing that we do and everything is really exactly for that point. You need to get to it and provide the strategies, talk about the ideas, and then let folks integrate, find a way to integrate it into their life. You know, help with that if they need it, but you know, certainly. And we've talked about attachment theory, and it's I think we underestimate the importance of attachment so often. Right. And that's a great perspective.
Yeah, because a lot of times, obviously, here, and again, another thing is in terms of culture, United States, we are so kind of focused on independence, right? So, but truly, we still need other people, and we want other people, and we want that validation from other people. But so it's attachment does follow you throughout your whole lifetime. So,
oh, absolutely. So, all right. Did you have any other questions?
No, I just have to do some therapy now. I have to run home and do some therapy.
get to Amazon.
I'm telling you, I'm paying 10 copies.
So, well,
I'm going to be all over the house, in the bathrooms, in the cars, in the bedrooms, everywhere, every kitchen.
She's gonna hate me. She's not even going to know me. She's going to hate me.
I'm going to get a phone call. And then, Bernie, what's going on with this? I don't know.
Who's this woman Richard is seeing?
That's right.
No, it's great, and I will. I know I'll definitely be recommending it to some of the couples that I work with.
Need it. I have a couple of couples. Their relationships are really solid, but they're having this single problem, and it really shouldn't be the problem that it is. And this is going to give them a wonderful solution. So, thank you very much.
Yeah, I will have a link to both the paperback copy and the Kindle version in the show notes, so folks can just click right there and go right to it at Amazon and pick it up.
Thank you. And any feedback you have, even from your clients or from anyone else, I definitely appreciate it, because it's evolving, and it's different perspectives always help. So
absolutely,
be happy to.
Now, is there what is the best way for people to follow what you're doing, or to keep updates with the new stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, so right now I'm just on Twitter. Twitter is the only thing, because honestly, you guys are way more technically advanced than I am. I'm going to follow in your footsteps, not with the podcast, because I'm not as good at that. But I am going to have a website, and then hopefully a blog and so on. So there's going to be a little bit more like that in the next few months. Mm-hmm. I attempted that last time, and I did not have the time to actually maintain the blog and do the website and all that. It's just, it takes a lot. So this time I'm going to do it the smart way and actually hire people to do it.
There you go.
In a few months, I'm actually going to have a website, and I'll keep you guys posted on that. But in the meantime, just Twitter.
Okay. And that's at DRRUXLEMAY. Dr. Rux LeMay. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll include a link to that in the show notes as well, so folks can follow you. And anytime you ever want to come back on and talk about whether it's the next book or the website, or just to say, hey, this is what's going on. I had 2 minutes to spare. I thought I would call and see what's happening.
I reserved 2 minutes and didn't have anything else to do.
Absolutely. I would love to keep in touch. And also, I like to promote your guys' work. I love your podcast. I actually, like I said, I can only promote it on Twitter because that's where I am. But I love that. And I love the way you break it down. And just small bites, right? Because I like small bites.
That's right.
Well, listen, as you're writing this second book, when you get to really interesting things that you want to share, you don't have to wait till you finish the book. Just come in anytime.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Let us know.
So go ahead.
Great meeting you guys.
Good meeting you, Roxandra.
It's been fantastic talking with you, and I can't wait to talk to you again. So I feel like I learned a lot today.
He's ready to go home and practice. That's what
I think so.
Exactly.
I think so. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
You too, Roxanne.
And thank you all for listening. And we will definitely have all the information for the book and how to follow Roxandra. It's great, great information. So
good stuff.
That's it for us today. So until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.